Right.
So, I mean, and, you know, I've never done an Ironman before myself, but just 50-mile ultra marathons, so kind of pulling those biking and swims into the mix has been a little bit interesting, so.
Right.
But
how many ultras have you done?
4.
Okay.
Yeah, I've done 4. I'm actually coming back out to the east to do a North Face Endurance Challenge run in May, so.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, be in your neck of the woods a little bit, because you're in Connecticut, right?
Right.
Cool. Cool. Are you doing any races yourself coming up?
No, you know, I haven't raced in, it'll be almost 3 years this summer. I just don't have any interest or desire to race at all. The last race I did was Coeur d'Alene, and I had my best race ever in terms of placement and time and everything else, and I'd gone there to go qualify for Kona again, and everything was great. And for whatever reason, during the race, I started asking myself what I was doing or why I wanted, what was I doing there, and fought with myself most of the race in terms of why I was there, what I was doing. And after the race, I just kind of sat down and said, you know, I don't think I want to do this anymore. And I thought I kind of would go back to Kona every year, and that would just be part of what I did and enjoy it and everything else. But I think what I learned was that my drive was to get to Kona and to do that race. And once I did, I think that the desire to work and to be as focused as I had been had kind of waned, and I don't miss it. And I think what I became much more addicted to now in terms of coaching is really being around people who most of my folks, I'd say probably about 2/3, maybe half, are first timers. And, you know, that's an infectious relationship to have. I mean, to be around people who are, you know, scared to death on one side of things, but also more motivated than you could ever imagine on the other. I mean, it's a pretty powerful combination, and that's just not something that I have anymore. I mean, they all have something I'll never have again, and that's the first time. And I think there's something very, really infectious and intoxicating about it. So that's where I really get my fix more than anything. It's, you know, hanging out with folks who are driven to achieve a goal and that I can be a part of. So.
Wow, that's awesome. So you're just not training for anything yourself, or do you train with your clients, or?
No, I'm a CrossFitter, just an average CrossFitter like anybody else. I mean, I don't train at all. I mean, I can't remember the last time I raced at all, at any level or any degree. I think, you know, the competitive side of things from CrossFit really feeds that need for me, or fills that niche. In terms of, you know, I compete every day, and that's filled that part for me. But in terms of my clients, you know, about 100%, you know, maybe 99% are all virtual. So, I mean, I have clients I've never seen before, and never will see ever again, and never have seen. No, I don't train with anybody unless, you know, they're just kind of buddies from the gym kind of a thing, or my kids or my wife. But so that's where I'm at.
Okay, that's cool. Interesting. So you have most of your business virtual, huh?
All of it. I mean, I can't think of any. I don't meet with anybody, or, I mean, if someone's in the area, if they know me from a relationship or something, you know, maybe we'll meet at a, you know, at a Starbucks or somewhere in town, or chat face to face. But that's really an exception to the rule. It's only because they're, you know, they're close by, I'm close by, and it's not a big deal, so we can just go meet face to face. But, you know, everything else is all virtual.
Wow, that's very cool. What platform do you use to get new clients?
I don't believe this business can ever be one that's kind of mass market. I think it's from a very CrossFit perspective. I don't market. I don't sell. I don't do anything like that. I have a website. Just really more of the TriMax website is more of a resource than anything else. I mean, there's free information and articles and I think links or just awareness or interviews about, you know, triathlon, whether it's training, or I think we've done about 2-3 dozen interviews with all the best triathletes in the world, you know, Chris McCormick and Lisa Bentley and Joanna Zeiger, and the list goes on. But so that is kind of a, hey, this is who we are and what we do. But in terms of you know, how do we grow our business, so to speak, you know, I really don't believe the relationships we have are just that, they're relationships. So, you know, we have someone who's had a good experience with us, you know, the biggest compliment they can pay us is telling a friend, and that's where we've been. So I think we started, how long has it been now? Is it 2011? I think we started, I think I officially or formally put the website and kind of opened up shop probably just before Coeur d'Alene. So it's almost 3 years ago. And I think we started off with just, you know, one, two clients who said, hey, you know, I'm interested in helping, getting some help. And I think we're just under 40 right now. And we have three coaches who run the relationships. And, you know, that's, you know, all just been 100% word of mouth of folks having a good experience or looking to try to get some more insight in terms of their training.
Wow. That's really cool. That's very cool.
That's fun.
Man, I've done a little bit of online training myself, and that sounds like you got that keyed in. Sounds like it's great.
Yeah, we can't complain. I think we're starting to get filled up again. I think that, you know, we've got 40 active clients now, but you know, I think if this continues to kind of go this little trajectory, I think, you know, we want to make sure that a big part of what we do is customer service and response time. I mean, you know, online training, when someone says that can range from anywhere from, you know, hey, I bought a plan for a couple $100 or frankly, I got a free one, to, you know, I think there are a fair amount of pros out there also that, you know, for an age group who's trying to burn money, you know, you can spend upwards of $1,000 a month and, you know, talk to a, you know, have a pro or somebody, you know, engage you a couple times a month or kind of rewrite a plan and work with you. But for us, you know, what we really stand for is really more of a CrossFit mentality. And we don't really talk about it because I think it scares away a fair amount of traditional endurance athletes. Before I became a head coach with CrossFit, you know, intensity was always a big driver for us and our athletes and for me as well. And the relationship in customer service, when, you know, when somebody calls or needs us, you know, we respond immediately. It's not one of these horror stories where you hear someone saying, well, you know, I hear from my coach however many days or weeks in apart. You know, we have an unlimited open door policy where, you know, you want to call, text, email, whatever it takes to get a hold of us, you know, we're going to respond as quickly as possible. That usually is within an hour and definitely no more than you know, 8 to 12 hours. I mean, you're definitely going to get same day service from us. So that's something we want to make sure that we can retain as we get larger, and we'll bring on more coaches as we need to.
Cool. You mentioned something about not wanting to scare the typical triathlete. How do you usually deal with that?
Yeah, well, I think that kind of feathers back to the answer to that question is kind of feathered in the same response in terms of how we market or how what we do in terms of, you know, in terms of getting new clients. I'm not interested in kind of taking a adversarial or a fairly, and I say ignorant, I use that word just in terms of the not aware, an ignorant or adversarial, you know, traditional triathlete, I won't even have the conversation with you. If you come to me with your arms folded and say, I heard you guys do all this crazy short stuff, you know, I don't think it works, some of that works, I'm not even going to take the phone call, I'm not going to take the email, I'm not going to take the media, I'm just not interested in it. So if, however, you know, someone has done a little bit of, you know, asking around, or they've spoken to some of our clients, or they've done research about intensity, and they realize and they know what we're known for in terms of, you know, they read something about how our athletes have performed or anything else, and they say, look, you know, I'm interested in learning more, but I'm a little sheepish, and I need some more awareness or understanding about why this works, you know, then we're going to talk to those people. So I say all that because there's a huge amount of almost installed either fear or doubt or ignorant passion around any other protocol that veers away from more is better. And I'm just not interested in having the debate over and over and over again when someone says, well, you know, how come such and such does this and so does that? I mean, you can literally find pros that train anywhere under the sun. I mean, I can, you know, talk about pros who can't spell the word weightlifting, and other pros, whether it's, you know, in a running or triathlon or in bench racing, who do nothing but weightlifting, you know, other pros who, you know, go long and slow, or, you know, or I should say, you know, spend the most of their time getting stronger, going longer. Other folks, you know, rarely go long, but have, you know, hugely intense workouts. So, you know, I won't even engage the dialogue, but when they do come and say that there's an interest or a valid concern about filling in gaps, then we'll talk to them and say, well, look, help me understand something. You know, what are your goals? What's your history? Where do you want to go? What are you frustrated with? What are you happy with? And how can we potentially fashion a solution for you? And that's not just a training, you know, conversation. That's training and nutrition as well as recovery and really everything around that particular athlete's goals. So for us, we want people who are interested in doing things potentially differently, not somebody who wants to give a lecture about what we do and how it works, and then they're going to go off and think about it. It's just wasted effort. So we don't want to spend our time, you know, basically, for lack of a better term, you know, pissing in the wind.
Sure. I completely agree with you. I've had that conversation many a time, so I can relate to you for sure. when did you actually discover the higher intensity training? Was it from the start, or did you start long?
You know, it's funny. I've known it for almost my whole life. When did I really become aware of knowing what I should have known when I was 16? It took me another 20 years. And I say it that way because I'd swam primarily. I'd played just about every sport at some point when I was a little kid, but primarily finally focused on swimming in high school. And I was a distance swimmer in high school, and distance in the world of swimming means in high school, it just means a 500-yard freestyle, which is, you know, is a 5-minute effort or something like that. But in the USS stuff and the Olympics, you're looking at, you know, 1500 meters or 1650, which is basically a mile, which just takes, you know, anywhere from 16 to 17 minutes. And then 1,000 free, which is, you know, 9 or 10 minutes. And then 400 IM will take you, you know, 4 or 5 minutes. But the point is that so I started swimming, and I'd swum in high school and in college. And when I was about 17, I entered this race. My coach had done it. It's a race around, it's a swim around Manhattan Island. And it's basically just under 29 miles, and you go from the Statue of Liberty and you circumnavigate Manhattan in a counterclockwise fashion. And that whole summer, I did the exact same workouts that my high school and USS teams did. And for folks who don't know what, you know, what swimming is like, you know, Michael Phelps does not get in the water and swim for an hour. It's not what he does. No one does. It's all 100% interval based. And it's just really a creative kind of spattering of, you know, whether it's your 50s or 100s or 200s or 500s or whatever it is, with various, you know, rest intervals, but it's all interval work. So all I did all summer was literally swim with my USS team. And in addition to that, I think I went to the Jersey Shore 2-3 times, and swam back and forth straight for, let's say, an hour and an hour and a half, I think, just to kind of, for whatever reason, feel, hang out, because it wasn't like anybody was really coaching me or had done this and knew what they were kind of doing. The coach who had done it wasn't with the program anymore. So my point is that I do all this stuff, and then I've never swum more than an hour and a half, and then I get in this race. It takes me just under 8 hours. I've become the second youngest in history to ever swim around Manhattan Island. I'm the second male in the race, the second American in the race, and the fifth fastest overall. So overnight, I'm this world-class marathon swimmer. I got cocky, and a couple months later, I tried to break the world record for most miles swum in a pool in a 24-hour period and covered 33 miles before basically going into shock. My nutrition was a joke, and I just basically passed out, and they pulled me out of the water. I say all that to say that I knew all that or had those experiences at 17. Yeah. Fast forward to, I don't know, like, what, 2006, 2005, I think. So I'm 35, and I discover triathlon. I start farting around and, you know, read some books and find out, hey, this is how this is done. And so I did a little bit of LSD work. I say LSD in the sense that, you know, there was, I think, by 2007, the desire in me to say, well, I probably need to get up to 16 hours a week. And I did. But that was the vast majority of that was very, very high intensity stuff. I mean, I live in an area with a fairly mountainous terrain. So all my biking was all intensity. All my swimming obviously continued to be intensity. And my running wasn't as intense, but I did enough interval work to kind of offset that at the time. And I didn't really know anything about CrossFit. In 2008, in 2007, I qualified for Kona. I did Lake Placid and Kona that year. And then 2008, when I did Coeur d'Alene, I cut everything back by about 30%, basically because I had a new job. I was also starting this coaching business, and I just had enough time to get the job done in terms of, you know, my priorities changed. So suddenly I began to consolidate workouts and take the same amount of work and do it even shorter. And then, you know, lo and behold, I had my best year of my life. I think I won 3 races locally. I podiumed at all the half Ironman races as well as quarter lane. It's kind of one of those things where, you know, you didn't realize what you had, kind of a thing. And so I had been training that way primarily, you know, really for much of my whole life, and didn't really kind of formalize it and really say, you know what, the real value in the training you've been doing is all the intensity, not just maybe, you know, going out for some random ride. Because for me, if I went out and did a 2 or 3 hour bike ride, you know, it was also climbing, you know, 5,000-6,000 feet. So, right. You know, and to this day, I've only ever done 3 centuries in my life in training. One was a complete joke. It was just a flat before my first Ironman, and the other two were just absolutely, you know, fierce. I mean, 10,000, 11,000 feet worth of climbing and, you know, horrible efforts. But the point is that, you know, I never got into that clique or that group of folks that would do some ridiculous, you know, 5, 6, 7 hour brick where you ride for 4 or 5 hours and run for 2. I mean, that just, it never happened.
Yeah. Well, it seems crazy when you talk to these guys and they're doing the 20, 30 hours a week. So,
you know, we talk about this a lot, and I don't mean to be adversarial, combative with it, but at the certs, but, you know, I have these people who say, oh man, I love this, or I did this and such, but hey, but, you know, I was training this guy and training for this, you know, maybe it was Leadville or something, so it's a, you know, 24-hour bike or something, and yeah, I did this, and hey, I believe all this interval stuff and this great stuff and CrossFit, blah, blah, blah. But hey, you know, I had to send out my guy, though, you know, for a 7-hour ride or something, and I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, how long was race day? And I think in this case, it wasn't Leadville, it was some, I don't know, the point is that the event took, I don't know, 12 hours or 13 hours, and it was a long, I think, bike race. Mm-hmm. So I said, oh, you know, you went out and did a 7-hour, you know, have a 7-hour ride. Yeah. He goes, yeah, I had to do that, man. You know, just got to get the miles. I go, just out of curiosity. So the race was 13. You did 7. Why didn't you do 8? And he wanted to have him do 8. And he just sat there. He didn't have a response to me. And he just kind of looks at me funny. And I go, you do realize that if you told me you'd done an 8-hour ride, I was going to ask you, you know, why didn't you go 9? Right. Or, you know, if you told me 9, I'd say, why didn't you go 10? So, you know, I think what happens is that because we're so surrounded by this concept that more is more, and more is better. You know, I don't think a lot of folks, I don't think, can actually be saved from themselves. I think they've just been led to believe that, hey, if I have the time and the resources, you know, longer is always better. And that's just simply not the case if you're trying to make a muscle down and to bring it back harder and stronger than it was before.
Sure. Cool. Sure, definitely. So how do you train your clients for nutrition if they've never gone long?
Now, that's the only exception. That's where people who follow the, or see or review or watch the CrossFit Endurance main site, you know, that main site is designed for the vast majority of the public who are doing, you know, God knows what, you know, anywhere from the I don't know, 5K up to a maybe even an ultra marathon. But what's not included and what you don't see in terms of just kind of the program that gets thrown out there is the stuff that's, for example, nutrition based, where you need to go out. And a triathlete, you know, probably needs to get out and run and ride a, you know, I don't believe they need to do a century at all, but I think definitely they need to probably ride probably in the 3-hour range. They probably need to run in the 2-hour range just to test their nutrition to see how their body responds in terms of a water and electrolyte and a fueling protocol. So what you do on those days is that you say, okay, you know, it's instead of doing that, maybe that time trial, that run time trial, and so I'm supposed to do a 10K, maybe time trial on this Saturday. Well, I'm going to go do a 2.5 hour, you know, a 15 mile run. And I'm going to do that at race pace, which for longer stuff, an ultra or a full marathon or an Ironman, you know, it's going to be significantly or might be significantly lower than a time trial effort. So an Ironman who's probably going to, you know, got a max heart rate effort of call it, you know, I don't know, 180, 185 beats a minute, you know, that run that might be 14, 15 miles is going to be done, you know, never breaking, you know, roughly 140, 145 and from at least from a heart rate perspective. So that's when they need to go out and test that nutrition and see how the body responds.
Okay, cool. How do you, or what do you prescribe as far as like running form, swimming form? Do you do the pose stuff or the total immersion stuff?
The stuff we teach at the Sturts is really what we call running mechanics. And without talking about pose or chi or evolution, what we kind of say, a lot of folks, will say, it's pose. Well, it is and it isn't. And I say it that way in that, you might say that you like Coca-Cola, or someone else might say, I like Pepsi. Well, at the end of the day, that's all cola. Mm-hmm. Yes, there's obviously maybe some taste issues or people feel stronger at one brand versus another. But at the end of the day, RC Cola, Pepsi, and Coke are what's known as cola. It is carbonated, it's a carbonated soft drink with cola flavoring. So whether you look at pose or chi or evolution, it all comes back to gravity-based running technique, harnessing gravity to go forward rather than traditionally, pushing off the back to go forward. So from a running technique perspective, we're very big advocates, and I am individually as well as with CrossFit Endurance, pushing a gravity-based running technique and methodologies. No heel striking, running on the ball of your foot, a very strong upright position, and then pulling your foot off the ground rather than pushing off of it to go forward. Mm-hmm. From a swimming perspective, I think that landscape from a well-known branding technique perspective is pretty barren. Total immersion is probably something that someone said, hey, look, I want to self-prescribe myself, and I don't have access to a swim coach in the area that I feel comfortable with. And then I think it's probably a good option. It's probably obviously better than just, swimming for half an hour in a pool thinking everything's great. Mm-hmm. And I think from a biking perspective, biking is by far, I think, the most blue-collar sport in the world of triathlon. I say blue-collar in that, swimming demands ultimate technique. If you don't know how to swim or you don't understand, the concepts of how to move in the water, the worst absolute possible thing you can do is swim harder, right? I mean, swimming is almost identical to golf. So you've never heard a golf pro say, Joe, you need to swing harder. You've never heard that before. And swimming is almost identical to that. It's all technique. Going down that scale, I think secondarily is running. And at the other end of that spectrum is biking. And that as long as you have a really, really good bike fit, and you're very comfortable on the bike, you're going to be able to get away with either potentially mashing pedals and not having the greatest, let's say, spin cycle in terms of really pulling that foot in this wonderful, circuitous pattern where you're really making the most of that entire pull cycle all the way around the crank, not just, pulling the pedal up or not just smashing it down. And the best way to really see that happen is using a CompuTrainer, where you can actually see where the power in your pedal stroke is, and you want it to be as circular as possible. And, bad pedal stroke is somebody who's got basically an oval that looks like an egg that's up and down, where someone is literally just smashing all their weight down and then, and then waiting for that pedal to come back up before they smash it back down again. From a technique perspective, there are ways to coach good cycling, but unless you have a way to actually see the changes that you're making, it's kind of tough to do.
Okay. And just like as far as your coaching goes, how do you usually handle clients with their form and technique if you don't meet with them personally?
That's something that we're not able to clear. I think the only thing we can do is we ask our clients to videotape running or swimming or anything else they want us to look at, and either post it on Facebook or YouTube or send it along, and we'll review it and give them feedback. But that is a downside in terms of our model. If you're going to come to us and look for significant technique insight, obviously the best case scenario is getting somebody hands on. But we do have a fair amount of clients who really kind of strike a very good balance, and that they'll retain the relationship they have with their local CrossFit affiliate, and then also work with us. So the CrossFit affiliate might give them a certain technique and programming on their CrossFit protocols, and then we'll provide any additional insight on their technique work, as well as provide their CrossFit endurance protocols.
Gotcha. Cool. How do you feel about paleo?
I think paleo is I think it speaks for itself. I think it's the only really way to fuel. Having said that, we've got anorexics, we've had bulimics that we coach, and it's not for everyone. And the last thing we want to do is when we do full blown nutrition analyses for everybody we work with, and coming out of the analysis, just as much as I'd love to say and thank that me and my wife and my kids and everybody we touch and work with, should all go down this paleo route, that's really just not going to happen as easily as you might think. So while I believe very strongly in it, you know, I'll also happily coach you in his own and his own protocol and or a blend of both, frankly. I mean, you know, I think that at the end of the day, when you look at a lot of these, not a lot, every successful eating protocol, it all comes down to insulin management. I mean, mm-hmm. So when someone says, oh, I'm strict paleo and they're still 30 pounds overweight, and you're looking like, you know what, buddy, with all due respect, there's no way you're not doing this right. You're either, you know, scarfing down way too much fruit. You know, in other words, you're not aware of your portion control. You get way too much fruit in your diet, or you get way too much nuts. And I know that you think that, hey, I'm eating natural, everything's great. But, you know, that kind of misses the mark from a paleo prescriptive. The paleo prescription really speaks more about, you know, seasonal fruits and vegetables. So in the dead of winter, you do not go, you know, to the supermarket and, you know, gorge on the grapes that were imported from, you know, California or Chile or anywhere else like that. So, but from a, you know, a purity standpoint, you know, quality is extremely important, from a paleo prescription. So I think that is really kind of unassailable, in terms of its value. But if someone, you know, is intimidated by that, you know, we'll happily bring people along from a zone perspective. In fact, you know, we'll actually suggest to people who don't have a good beat on nutrition to actually begin in a zone prescription and then move to paleo, because the zone prescription really mandates that you learn about what you're eating. You learn about the macronutrient perspective as well as the gram. You learn about your quality and your quantity. Prescription and zone. So I think we've had the most success when folks have gone in the zone for a while and then moved into paleo, because they already have a huge amount of education to bring to the table.
Sure. And how do you link the paleo diet or the zone diet to your actual training, let's say race day nutrition? Is there any correlation there?
Well, you asked kind of two questions there. From a training perspective, you know, you need to eat as much as you need to fuel performance. In other words, I really don't care if you're 300 pounds or 150 pounds. All I care about is performance. So as long as you're, you know, PRing, continue to get stronger and better in your training, I really don't care, you know, how much you eat. We might start somebody on a 16-block prescription or a paleo, you know, hey, you know, don't worry about weighing and measuring your food. But if their performance, you know, falters at all, then we're going to go back to the way that they're training, eating, or recovering and prescribe any changes. So from an everyday perspective, that's the only real metric for us is performance. On race day, that's where things get a little hairy. You know, I've run into some folks who are, for lack of a better term, kind of paleo Nazis, and, you know, will say, hey, on race day, that's all I want. You know, I'm paleo, and, you know, hear me roar. And that's fine, but, you know, depending on what kind of an athlete you are, I mean, if you're an ultra runner and you want to stay paleo during your race, that's fine, but you have to strip in, you know, the majority of your own food anyway. So it's really not a big deal. But if someone's going to call me and say, hey, look, I really want to, you know, PR in an Ironman event, or, hey, I want to go to Kona, and, you know, in other words, you know, time literally down to the second is a big deal.
Right.
Then I'm not going to push a paleo prescription. I'm going to have them eat right off the course, and I'm actually going to have them eat exactly what the course has available and make sure they understand how to eat off the course. You know, Ironman competitions are wonderful, wonderfully supported in that, you know, on the bike, there's like 5 aid stations. On the run, there's 26, literally one at every mile. But, you know, if you don't know what's on the running course, it can be intimidating for someone who doesn't know how to eat. And I say that because for Ironman branded events, literally at every single mile, there are cookies, bars, gels, grapes, bananas, orange juice, Gatorade. Actually, it's the Nestle, I think, Power. No, it's not Powerade. It's Perform is the name of the isotonic brand. Perform, water, ice, and sponges. And then when it gets dark, they bring out and Coke as well. Coke Cold will be on site on the race course, as well as chicken broth. So you don't have to remember anything I just told you, but of the dozen things I just vomited at you, you know, what are you going to eat? I mean, if you don't know how to eat, I mean, God, you can very easily end your day if you combine some of that stuff in the wrong way. So for us on race day, we want to make sure that our athletes are picking a water source, a hydration source, number one. Number two, a fuel source. And number three, an electrolyte source. And for us, there isn't any other answer in the world of hydration besides water. That's it. Period. End of story. No other option. Water. Mm-hmm. The fuel source is going to be a simple sugar, because for most events, when you're looking at, you know, 18-hour Ironman, 17 hours and below, We haven't had any issues with folks eating off the course and going ahead and, you know, eating, you know, obviously it's fructose or dextrose or maltodextrin, depending on which brand of gel they might be consuming. And then we want them to have an electrolyte planning protocol, which generally speaking is going to be Salt Stick. And that's because that there's just no other brand. There's no other product like Salt Stick. Salt Stick is an electrolyte replacement capsule that just has, extremely high level of potency. In other words, you know, one capsule of Salt Stick is the equivalent of 3 to 4, just about every other competitor that has that there. And it also has a perfect electrolyte profile. It is literally the equivalent. It is the equivalent of roughly 11 to 12 ounces of human sweat, which means it's got, you know, calcium and magnesium, sodium, potassium, and everything you need from an electrolyte perspective. And, you know, salt tabs will just give you sodium. So those are the three big buckets we want to execute on race day.
Wow. Very cool. Great answer. Awesome. How do you prepare for, or how do you get clients to prepare for their longer races mentally if they've never gone long before?
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? I mean, when someone says, well, you know, gee, I need to do something mentally, or I need to, you know, go down this path a certain way, and that goes back to almost the story I told you about this guy in this bike race, right? You know, somehow he had either been led to believe or told or coached or counseled or what have you, that, hey, if you're going to ride a bike for 12 or 13 hours, you need to go ride 7. And I'll say the same thing. Well, why not 8?
Right.
And then if you say there's 8, I'll say, why not 9? I have athletes who have told, you know, on paper, that my kind of, I don't know, garden variety version is that for Ironman triathlete, I think it probably mentally feels right to be able to, you know, swim 2.5 miles standalone, do a standalone marathon before your race, and do a century before your race. So just on standalone, just so you're aware that, hey, you can go ahead and do those things from a mental standpoint. Having said all that, if you break all that down, right, and 2.5 mile swim is what, 1.5 hour, 2 hours, you know, marathon, even if you're slow, it's, you know, 4 to 6 hours. And then what's a century? I mean, I don't know, 7 hours, you know, for me, obviously it'd be as low as, you know, 4 and change, but, you know, even a newbie, I think, should probably be under 7 hours in a training ride. Mm-hmm. But on race day, suddenly, you know, you're going to be anywhere between 8 and 17 hours. So, oh my gosh, you know, what's the deal? So my point is, Joe, is that it doesn't matter. It's up to the athlete. If the athlete has some absolute, you know, inherent fear about what race day is, then I guess you probably better address it. But on paper, you know, if someone says, what is the clinical answer to get your body ready to be able to go X distance, you know, it's not pure and clean. Unfortunately, the world of, you know, especially in running, right? I mean, you go to coolrunning.com or probably Runner's World or, I don't know, got a dozen websites out there and get, you know, free training plans that have their folks basically, you know, adding 10% every week to their training for 3 straight weeks. The fourth week, you got minus 15% in the volume, and you repeat this periodized pyramid for however long it takes you to basically do, and in some cases, literally, they'll have you run a 24 or 26 mile effort 3 weeks before your marathon. So, you know, I think that is probably a defaulted answer to your question. Like, you know, what's the right answer? Well, you know, get as close as the full as you can, you know, for the event that you're training for. You know, the ultras you did. I mean, did you go off and, you know, did you run 24 hours in a practice run? Did you, you know, so there isn't. I think that the endurance community has this feeling that the closer I get to what I'm going to do on race day is better, and I don't believe it. I don't believe it at all. It's my own experience. When I'm 17 years old, you know, training an hour and a half and suddenly swimming for as many as 13 hours. And then in my own experience from a triathlon perspective, it's very, very mental. And, you know, to answer your question, the next question of, okay, what do you do if someone's mental? Well, then you go back to exactly what we just talked about, what you don't need to do unless you are mental, which is probably have longer efforts to say, look, you know, you can do it. That's a fairly personal question regarding, you know, somebody's confidence in how they're training and what they think they're capable of on race day.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I completely agree. And I you know, you've done the things where you've trained short and you've gone, you know, gone out and done much longer efforts. And I personally, I've tested that myself with only doing CrossFit and then going out and running a 50 mile training run just so I could show people that it was possible. But having not gone through that before, like if I, you know, if having never done long, I can imagine that, you know, it'd just be mentally taxing on somebody.
You know what? I think you know what that, you know what that is though. And I can't remember the line, but there's a great quote of something about, you know, something about not telling young people what they aren't capable of, because it just might show you what in fact they are capable of. And it really just speaks to, you know, basically, you know, your own worst enemy is yourself. You know, you're only held back by you, and or you are not limited by who you think you are, but by who you think you aren't. So if you're surrounded by people who tell you that you're a bitch and you're a loser and you can't get this stuff done unless you, you know, chalk up massive mileage or time in the saddle, whether it's cycling or whatever it is, then you know what? They're probably right. Because if you're not mentally strong enough to actually go the other way, I mean, so let's have the other dialogue. You know, when you started CrossFit, did anyone ever tell you that you couldn't, you know, deadlift 400 pounds? No, it's just a matter of, hey, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You're getting, you know, I'm sure you'll be able to, you know, deadlift your PR and continue to get stronger. No one ever told you that you were physically incapable of back squatting, you know, 250 or 300 pounds. Yet somehow in the endurance community, you know, there's this feeling of, you know, if I would suggest that if you told, not you, but, you know, the average person told anyone in their community or their family, oh, I'm going to run a marathon, you know, I would suggest that everyone around them would first words out of the mouth, well, how long have you run before? So right out of the gate, you know, there's this very, very strict, almost, phalanx of a path you must go down about being challenged, about, you know, about how much you've run and what you're capable of, and have you built up a base, and you've have done these things. So I believe it's much more environmental than it is, you know, personal mentality. If you're going to let other folks tell you what you're capable of, then you know what? They're going to be right every single time. So, and that's just a very different mentality, I think, for a fair amount of folks in the endurance community.
Oh yeah, I think that's awesome, because I tend to preach the same thing in any kind of community where you are the five people that you hang around the most. So if you hang around people that have big dreams and think they can achieve lots of stuff and they are achieving those things, then you're going to, you know, inevitably be able to do similar things. So awesome. Let's see. As you have clients that are going through, or as you're going through training, how do you deal with injuries or people getting broken down for their training?
I think it sounds like a fairly, hey, give me the kind of the almost the, you know, the give me the secret key or answer. And you know what it is? It's shut the shit down. It's just stop. You know. You know, if you're knocked down, you're beaten down just as much as you were all full of piss and vinegar on the front end of the workout, right? And you tore yourself out. You need to be just as vigilant to shut it down. And you need to understand that. And I think that, you know, in the world of, at least in terms of triathlon and a fair amount of endurance activities, you get too many, you know, type A meatheads who come in to say, oh, you know, more is more. And, you know, I got 5 hours of sleep last night and I'm a rock star and, you know, I'm all high energy. I'm all, you know, overachiever and, you know, hear me roar. And, you know, these are the same dopes who can't figure out why they're not getting any stronger, when in reality, if they were simply as disciplined as they are, disciplined in the world of recovery and in nutrition as they are in training, you know, they'd be infinitely better athletes. So our experience has been, you really need to save the athlete from themselves. And when somebody, you know, calls me or says, oh, I got hurt, but hey, I quote unquote ran through it or did this, or hey, I'm going to, you know, work it out or muscle through it, all this other stuff. I go, just out of curiosity, you know, you sent your check this month, right? And like, yeah, well, what do you mean? I'm like, well, look, you said, just out of curiosity, why? And if you've decided to kind of self-prescribe this thing, you've broken yourself down because you've gone off the reservation or you've hurt yourself. Why aren't you listening to me if, in fact, they don't take our, you know, my or one of our coaches coaching to say, you know, to shut it down and heal? So, you know, that's, I think, our role more than anything, is really to kind of pick up a mirror and show them to athletes and say, guys, look, you know, be smart here. You need to shut this thing down and get it healed before you jump back in. So that's the biggest thing, the biggest role I think we have from an injury management perspective, obviously in addition to doing whatever skill work we can to help folks understand how to not to get injured.
Sure. And do you keep them doing other activities that aren't aggravating the injury, or do you just totally shut them down?
Well, absolutely. I think it's a big deal. I think, actually, I just got an athlete who who just tore a shoulder out, and I got another athlete who just did something to the back of his knee, and it was the same dialogue. It was, you know, like, oh man, you know, the doctor said I can't do this. I'm like, I don't really care. I mean, at all. I mean, I've got someone said that, you know, gee, I can't swim. Okay, but I mean, really, do you really care about the hour or the hour and a half you're going to spend on race day? I mean, so let's just pretend you go 10 minutes slower. Okay, I guess you're going to go 10 minutes slower. I mean, you know, it's just not a big part of your day. Mm-hmm. And similarly, from a leg perspective, you know, I had a guy last year who did Ironman Coeur d'Alene, and we found out in the middle of February that he had broken his foot and was going to be unable to run at all, literally at all, mm-hmm. until race day. So understand what that is. That's February. Coeur d'Alene's in the, you know, end of June. So that's March, April, May. It's almost, you know, you're looking at 3.5 months of literally no running at all for a guy who's about to do an Ironman.
Right.
So, you know, and he's like, hey, Max, what should I do? I'm like, well, we're just not going to articulate your foot. We're going to row you all the time. You know, we're not going to do any box jumps, no burpees, nothing that's going to aggravate or articulate that foot, but we're going to, you know, beat it up. You know, clearly we're going to keep squatting and rowing and deadlifting and anything else that doesn't cause any foot articulation. And, you know, lo and behold, didn't run for 3 months, those Coeur d'Alene and PRs. So, you know, I think a lot of the injuries are really going to be as limiting as you let them be if you've decided, you know, you're going to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Sure. Sure. Leading into that, Eric, following up with that question, how long do you think people need to be training before they attempt an ultra distance event?
Yeah, that's again, without sitting on the fence or being cheesy, it's going to be a very, very personal answer. I mean, if someone just said, look, I get, you know, Johnny's really in great shape and, you know, might be able to ramp up in a short amount of time. You know, Sally's horribly deconditioned and is going to take a long amount of time. You know, I think for the most part, you're probably looking at 6 months just to even a fully fledged CrossFitter. I want them probably for 6 months at a kind of a minimum, because in that 6 months, I want a couple things done. I want nutrition protocols, exercise. I want salt rate protocols taken so we can understand what your salt rate is, your sweat rate is. I want at least a race or two for an Ironman. I want at least one half Ironman in there because I want to taper you down. I want to see how your body reacts to being tapered. So 6 months is probably a good, you know, area. But if somebody told me, hey, I just signed up for an Ironman and it's 3 months away, can I do it? I'm going to say absolutely. And all day. I'm never going to tell you you're not capable of, you know, of achieving what you want to achieve based on the resources you're going to afford me and yourself. So if someone says they got 3 months and says, look, this means a lot to me, I need somebody to help me, I guess we have 3 months. So, you know, I say it that way because I want people to always know when we talk to them that, you know, stop reading the book that said you need to, you know, spend X amount of time. So if you just want to do something, you know, hey, I think those are my answers. If someone said, well, hey, you know, I've only ever gone 3:41 and I want to break 3 hours in a marathon, well, you know, the answer could be different.
Okay. Gotcha. Cool. How many ultra endurance races do you feel like somebody could do in a year with CrossFit?
You know, I think, you know, that's another kind of a squirrely question in that it really depends on, you know, who that person is. If someone, for example, doesn't really care about the time, right, and they just want to cough up a bunch of 100-milers, then you know what? If someone's going to chalk up, you know, 30-hour 100-mile races, then, you know, the answer is probably, what, 10 a year kind of a thing. Like, if you just want to keep plodding along just because you like to beat the crap out of yourself, then you can probably, you know, fit in 10 or 12. If someone tells me, hey, I want to qualify and do Badwater, or, you know, I want to do Western State, all this other stuff, then it's a separate conversation, because I think that, you know, for ultimate optimal performance, you know, you've only got a certain amount of tapers in the year that I think that you can probably peak for, or you probably want to peak for as an age grouper. I mean, obviously even the pros might race from a triathlon perspective, might race, you know, every couple of weeks or do half Ironmans every couple of weeks and do it consistently. They're going to, you know, race basically broken down for a fair amount of time of the year. But when they have an A race or, you know, a big B race that they're trying to podium for or get paid on, you know, they're going to rest a little bit. So I think it really depends on what the goals of the athlete are.
Okay, and you mentioned tapering. In a lot of my research, I felt like there wasn't as much tapering in the CrossFit endurance. Can you address that?
Yeah, we're looking at basically a 10-day taper, and that basically starts, you know, with the Saturday race. You're looking at basically the Friday or so before the race, so, you know, 8-9 days out, and I think you know, for us, the reason why we're so short, you know, being 7 to 9 days versus the 3 weeks for most endurance folks, is that we're not destroying our aerobic pathways so significantly that they need 3 weeks of recuperation. You know, we're looking at 1 week. It's really giving our folks enough time because they're not so thrashed aerobically. So they're able to basically take a week, play with their system, you know, fool their bodies into believing they still need to produce all this, you know, all these healing hormones and glycogen store replenishment and all this other stuff for about a week, and they're ready to go. We haven't had any issues at all with folks tapering just at that degree.
Okay. Cool. Well, shoot, that's about all the questions that I had for you in this. If you know, there's people that are listening to this and they want to come and train with you, how do you recommend they get in touch with you?
They can just get a hold of us at gotrimax.com and just drop us an email, and we'll go ahead and make sure we do our due diligence in terms of understanding your needs and wants, and then assign a coach to you, and we're going to hopefully at least answer your questions, if not sign you up. So.
Okay. And do you have any or people that you know on the West Coast that you recommend as far as, like, if you're going to work with somebody to do form work?
I think, you know, we've got about 4 CrossFit endurance coaches on the West Coast. They're all in either San Diego or California. There's 4 folks. One guy's name is Nunu Costa, Costa. And all these guys, by the way, can be reached at info@CrossFitEndurance.com. But Nuno Costa, Brian McKenzie, the founder of CrossFit Endurance, Carl Borg is another one, and Mark Holman are all in the San Diego, LA area who can help out.
Okay. Cool. Well, thank you so much for your time, Max. I really appreciate
sure.
it. And
no
if there's
problem.
Anything that I can do to help you at all, you know, never hesitate to ask and or drop some lines on my blog or whatever. So.
Great.
I appreciate your time, and man, wish you all the best.
Thank you as well, Joe. Good luck in the race this year.
Great. Thank you, Max.
See ya.
Take care.